On this 28th day of August 2006, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in chapter 2 entitled Contents of the Gita Summarized, and text 15. 17. Yes, 17. You sure? Really sure? Okay. Because I knew we did this one last night.
And then from 14 to 15 to 16.
Okay. Text 17, page 87 on most books. 217. Avinashi tutad vidhi. Yena sarvamidam tatam. Vinashamam vihasyasya nakashchit kartam arhati avinashi tu tad vidhi yena sarvamidam tatam vinashamam vihasyasya nakashchit kartam arhati. That which pervades the entire body, you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. Purport. This verse more clearly explains the real nature of the soul, which is spread all over the body. Anyone can understand what is spread all over the body. It is consciousness. Everyone is conscious of the pains and pleasures of the body, in part or as a whole. This spreading of consciousness is limited within one's own body. The pains and pleasures of one body are unknown to another. Therefore, each and every body is the embodiment of an individual soul, and the symptom of the soul's presence is perceived as individual consciousness. This soul is described as 1/10,000th part of the upper portion of the hair point in size. The Shvetashvatara Upanishad 5.9 confirms this. Balagra shatabhagasya shatadha kalpitasya cha bhago jiva savigyaya sachanantyaya kalpate. When the upper point of a hair is divided into 100 parts, and again, each of such parts is further divided into 100 parts, each such part is the measurement of the dimension of the spirit soul. Similarly, the same version is stated, Keshagra shatabhagasya shatangsha sadrashatmakaha jiva sukshma sorupo yam sankyatito hi chitkanaha. There are innumerable particles of spiritual atoms which are measured as 1/10,000th of the upper portion of the hair. Therefore, the individual particle of spirit soul is a spiritual atom smaller than the material atoms, and such atoms are innumerable. This very small spiritual spark is the basic principle of the material body. And the influence of such a spiritual spark is spread all over the body as the influence of the active principle of some medicine spreads throughout the body. This current of the spirit soul is felt all over the body as consciousness, and that is the proof of the presence of the soul. Any layman can understand that the material body minus consciousness is a dead body, and this consciousness cannot be revived in the body by any means of material administration. Therefore, consciousness is not due to any amount of material combination, but to the spirit soul. In the Mundaka Upanishad 3.19, the measurement of the atomic spirit soul is further explained. Esho nuratma cetasa veditam yo yasmin pranak panchada samvivesha pranais chittam sarvam otam prajanam yasmin vishuddhe vibhavat esha atma. The soul is atomic in size and can be perceived by perfect intelligence. This atomic soul is floating in the five kinds of air, prana, apana, vyana, samana, and udana. It's situated within the heart and spreads its influence all over the body of the embodied living entities. When the soul is purified from the contamination of the five kinds of material air, its spiritual influence is exhibited. The Hatha Yoga system is meant for controlling the five kinds of air encircling the pure soul by different kinds of sitting postures. Not for any material profit, but for liberation of the minute soul from the entanglement of the material atmosphere. So, the constitution of the atomic soul is admitted in all Vedic literatures, and it is also actually felt in the practical experience of any sane man. Only the insane man can think of this atomic soul as all-pervading Vishnu Tattva. The influence of the atomic soul can be spread all over a particular body. According to the Mundaka Upanishad, this atomic soul is situated in the heart of every living entity. And because the measurement of the atomic soul is beyond the power of appreciation of the material scientists, some of them assert foolishly that there is no soul. The individual atomic soul is definitely there in the heart along with the super soul, and thus all the energies of bodily movement are emanating from this part of the body. The corpuscles, which carry the oxygen from the lungs, gather energy from the soul. When the soul passes away from this position, the activity of the blood, generating fusion, ceases. Medical science accepts the importance of the red corpuscles, but it cannot ascertain that the source of the energy is the soul. Medical science, however, does admit that the heart is the seat of all energies of the body. Such atomic particles of the spirit soul are compared to the sunshine molecules. In the sunshine, there are innumerable radiant molecules. Similarly, the fragmental parts of the Supreme Lord are atomic sparks of the rays of the Supreme Lord, called by the name Prabha, or superior energy. So whether one follows Vedic knowledge or modern science, one cannot deny the existence of the spirit soul in the body. And the science of the soul is explicitly described in the Bhagavad Gita by the personality of Godhead himself. Om Jnanatamaram Bhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. So the previous verse spoke of the Sat and the Asat. As we discussed last night, the Sat is the eternal and the Asat is the temporary. Everything material is temporary. It changes. This is the nature. Sometimes this world is called Bhavasagara, the ocean of change. Bhava means to become, constantly becoming. So the nature of the lower energy of Krishna, the inferior energy, comprised of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, is to be constantly in flux. And it's this change that really is the cause of our suffering in this world, because we want to get that permanent position of happiness, and we can never get it in this world. So the Sat is the eternal, the Asat is the change. What is eternal? It is spirit. Both the individual spirit and the supreme spirit are eternal. They never change, never born, never died. And here we learn avyayasya. Now the word for disease is vyaya. Janma mrityu jara vyadi. Vyadi. The same vyadi is disease. So it's the same root here of the word vyaya. Here it says avyayasya. Yasya, that is avyaya, means it doesn't deteriorate. Disease is a deterioration of the natural functioning of the body. So the same idea is there. Avyayasya means imperishable. Never passes away, never decreases. So avinashi means it's never destroyed. So that's a major point of concern here. Krishna is explaining to Arjuna that these individuals who you're feeling so much compassion for, Bhishma, Drona, and all the others, they're not going to be killed. Their bodies may be changed, but they themselves will go on, and in fact, they'll get a higher destination because of their exalted nature. So, in that score, one doesn't have to be upset or disturbed by the change of body. You remember three verses back, we had Dehinos Minyata Dehe, that in this body, the soul is passing from boyhood or childhood to youth, to middle age, old age, and then gets another body at death. The dhira, the sober person, the calm person, is not disturbed by the change. of his own body, because he knows he's not the body. And similarly, one should not be disturbed by the change of other people's body. The instruction began here with Krishna telling Arjuna, you're lamenting for what's not worthy of grief. While speaking learned words, you're lamenting for what is not worthy of grief, namely, the body, the change of body. So he's continuing with his explanation here. So the next point is, you should know that that the soul is indestructible and that it pervades the body. This is an important concept Prabhupada deals with quite extensively in this purport, is that we experience that. If you just accept the premise now that the particle of spirit, infinitesimal, this 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair is really just an approximation. First of all, what hair? Is it a blonde hair or is it a black hair? They have different sizes, you know. So the idea is that it's smaller than you can perceive. It's smaller than the atom. An atom is a lot smaller than 1/10,000th part of the tip of a hair. But in any case, it's smaller than the smallest possible subatomic particle. It's smaller than that. It's beyond the ability of us, of anyone to perceive by material means. So therefore, it's said to be invisible. And because it's invisible, and not just invisible, but you can't weigh it, you can't smell it, taste it, hear it, it's beyond the senses. Therefore, unless we get higher knowledge, we won't understand that it exists. So we're understanding that it exists by inference. Of course, we understand it exists because Krishna says so. But there are many kind of evidences we can glean just from our daily life. The first thing is that consciousness pervades the body. We can experience. You stub your toe, you're conscious of your toe. But if you cut your fingernail or your toenail, it doesn't hurt. There's no consciousness. Why? There's no blood circulation in the fingernail or the toenail or the hair. Wherever there's the blood circulating, that's where you have feeling. The nerves are active, the body is being nourished, and the consciousness is pervading through the circulation of the blood in this way. So this is a very illuminating point. When this, isn't it? From the prana, yes. Well, the blood is carrying the prana, let's put it that way. It's carrying the influence of those airs in the heart area, yeah. So it picks up the prana, right? Or, you know, in a grosser sense, the oxygen, right? The scientists know it as oxygen. But the idea is that this consciousness pervades through the bloodstream. And when the soul leaves the body, there's no consciousness, there's no feeling. You can kick the body, you can cut it, there's no response. There's no consciousness there, isn't it? Another idea is that it's like the sun in the sky. We may not see the sun. Maybe it's overcast. But we see light in the sky. We can infer that the sun is there in the sky because we see that there's light everywhere. So the presence of consciousness in the body, from that we can infer the presence of the soul in the heart. This is the idea. So, vinasham avyasyasya nakashchit kartamarhati. No one can destroy this imperishable soul. So we share this quality with Krishna. Remember, we were learning how we can learn a lot about the Lord from studying ourselves. So one of the things that we can learn is that we are indestructible because the Lord is indestructible. We want to be indestructible in this body, but it's not possible. But once we at least have theoretically the understanding that we ourselves are the conscious principle in the body, and that everything else is something that we perceive. We perceive the mind. We perceive the senses. We perceive what's outside through the senses. But none of that is me. It is all my. It is all something that I claim, but it is all other than me. I am that perceptive being who's seeing all these things. And that perception is never annihilated. This is a very comforting fact to understand, that we will never die. You know, it changes our whole perspective in life. But it also puts upon us a imperative to fully understand the nature of that soul and what is that form that we have beyond this body. What is that spiritual form with spiritual senses composed purely of spirit and purely of consciousness? That we have yet to discover. But at present, these are very illuminating verses. that the body is destructible, the soul is not. This is the basic principle of this part of the Bhagavad Gita. You wanted to have a question or comment?
I didn't understand the five kinds of air.
Yes, this is a subject that I'm not so well aware of, but this is the subtle construction of the body. The soul actually never mixes with the body. Spirit and matter are like matter and antimatter almost. It's incompatible. So how can the soul interact with matter? There has to be a subtle mechanism. So there's these airs circulating throughout the body that are keeping the body healthy. If you study Ayurveda, right, you have the mucus, bile, and air, isn't it? These three elements that are, and if they get out of balance, then you get disease. So the whole idea of Ayurveda is to bring it back into balance. So the air is very important. You know, yeah, obviously air is so important to our health. So these subtle airs are helping digestion, the circulation of the blood, the intelligence, everything is working according to these subtle circulation of different kinds of prana. So in this way, the soul is floating in that heart area in these on these subtle energies known as prana, apana, vyana, samana, udana. There's more about these, I think, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I think we can find out if you're curious. But, you know, great yogis, by manipulation of the air, just like you can do so many things, you can become extremely powerful, you can increase your longevity. Sati, you know, she manipulated these airs and she immolated the body, self-immolation. Created tremendous heat. So this is a very subtle but very powerful science, manipulating these finer material energies. So, but as devotees, we're not so interested in that. You know, this is a subtle material science. It's no more spiritual than creating, technology outside. It's simply a subtle technology. It's very amazing. It's very wonderful. But in the end, there's nothing spiritual about it. So we leave it at that the soul is floating in five kinds of air. The important fact, which is mentioned in the 13th chapter, is that the soul never really mixes with the body. It only seems to, because we identify ourselves with the body, therefore we seem to be bodies. We identify. But in Krishna consciousness, self-realization, you withdraw that identification, you overcome that, or cleanse it away, and you realize I'm pure spirit. Which is very enlivening, you know. Then you can act on the spiritual platform, and the passage of time doesn't affect it. It's not material. Therefore, it doesn't matter how old you are, you know. Even on your deathbed, you can still be performing devotional service and living in your spiritual body, because it continues after death. Whatever material we're doing now will end at death or before death, because the tool we're using is decaying at every moment. What I can do now, physically, I won't be able to do in 10 or 20 years, obviously. So that's a great loss. If I'm thinking my whole identity is tied up with what I can do physically or sensually or even mentally, then I'm sure to be disappointed as life goes on and frustrated. But if I'm identifying spiritually and I have an internal life, you know, of spirit, which is what we're meant to cultivate, then that just gets nourished more and more as you go on in life, no matter how old you are. This is the difference. Okay, should we go on? Next verse is also very important. Andabandhi medaiha nitya sokta sharirinaha anashino prameyasya tasmad yudya subharata. The material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore, fight, O descendant of Bharat. Purport, the material body is perishable by nature. It may perish immediately, or it may do so after 100 years. It is a question of time only. There is no chance of maintaining it indefinitely. But the spirit soul is so minute that it cannot even be seen by an enemy, to say nothing of being killed. As mentioned in the previous verse, it is so small that no one can have any idea how to measure its dimension. So from both viewpoints, there is no cause of lamentation, because the living entity, as he is, cannot be killed, nor can the material body be saved for any length of time or permanently protected. The minute particle of the whole spirit acquires this material body according to his work and therefore the observance of religious principles should be utilized. In the Vedanta Sutras, the living entity is qualified as light because he is part and parcel of the supreme light. As sunlight maintains the entire universe, so the light of the soul maintains this material body. As soon as the spirit soul is out of this material body, the body begins to decompose. Therefore, it is the spirit soul which maintains this body. The body itself is unimportant. Arjuna was advised to fight and not sacrifice the cause of religion for material bodily considerations. So all of this understanding is meaningful in this context because the battle that he's fighting is a just battle. It's completely on the principles of Dharma. On the Duryodhana side, it's completely unjust. You know, he has no right to fight and kill the enemy because his cause is unjust. So the motivation is everything. The motivation for our activities is everything. The motivation of Arjuna makes it right. Now, remember at the beginning of the Gita, he was hesitant to fight because his motivation at that point, at least he was presenting it as such, was material. I want to get a kingdom. I was going to get, you know, by nature, his getting the kingdom, of course, he's the rightful heir to the throne, he and his four brothers. So in that sense, it's dharmic. But that kind of dharma is not eternal dharma, just to be rightfully the, you know, the inheritor of the throne. And so he saw a higher purpose. I'll be kind to my relatives, you know, and my friends on the other side. I can't stand the thought of killing them. In a profit and loss calculation materially, he saw the profit of seeing his friends and relatives and worshipable master alive as greater than enjoying this kingdom. And he says so. It'll just be soaked with blood of our loved ones. How can we enjoy it? Right? He says that. So by purely material calculation, he's declining to fight. But that's on the material side. Krishna is calculating everything from the spiritual side, from the transcendental, eternal side. And because it's his desire, it's actually the Lord's desire that this battle take place, therefore it's right, no matter how much blood is spilled. And for those who can see with the eyes of the Shastra, because everyone's going to be killed in the presence of Krishna, they all achieve transcendental destination. So it's suspicious on every score, even though it looks like a bloody holocaust, you know, from the material point of view. This battle at this time, under these circumstances, is just, and it's a good war, and that's why it's called Dharmakshetra. It's a Dharmakshetra. It's a field of religion. It's not just a battlefield. So now to the verse, Antavanti Medeha. So that's self-evident. The bodies are temporary, obviously. And nitya sokta sharirinaha, that which is in the body, the sharirinaha, the soul, is said to be eternal. And it is eternal. Krishna is now, he's quoting Shastra. It is said by the sages and the rishis, and the, you know, because of etiquette, he does that. Of course, it is eternal. He says so. Anashano, indestructible. He's repeating himself a little here. Now, here's something new, aprameyasya. Now, we learned that in the previous purport, but here he directly says it's immeasurable, meaning it's very, 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 very tiny. Tasmad yudhyasvabhara, therefore you should fight. So he's bringing it to the conclusion. This is why he's speaking all of this. The persons who you're fighting will never be killed. Their bodies may change, but they themselves will never be killed. And why the soul is so minute, and no weapon, as you will see in a few verses, cannot be burned, cannot be cut, cannot be dried and withered and so forth. So the soul is certainly imperishable, so you should not lament. The bodies may be ending, but the soul will not end. He's basically saying the same thing again and again from different points of view. And in a few verses, we'll come to the kind of summary verse, which is always quoted, probably usually quote text 20, to show the imperishability of the soul and the eternality of the soul. He would constantly quote this verse 20. It's worth memorizing. Okay, if there are no comments, we can go on to 19. Now, the conclusion of all this, yae nam veti hantaram nishtainam manyate hatam ubhautana vijanito nayam hanti nahanyate. So it always comes back to killing because on the battlefield. Neither he who thinks the living entity the slayer, nor he who thinks it slain, is in knowledge. For the self slays not, nor is slain. When an embodied living entity is hurt by fatal weapons, it is to be known that the living entity within the body is not killed. The spirit soul is so small that it is impossible to kill him by any material weapon, as will be evident from the subsequent verses. Nor is the living entity killable because of his spiritual constitution. What is killed, or is supposed to be killed, is the body only. This, however, does not at all encourage killing of the body. The Vedic injunction is Mahingshat Sarva Bhutani. Never commit violence to anyone. Nor does understanding that the living entity is not killed encourage animal slaughter. Killing the body of anyone without authority is abominable and is punishable by the law of the state as well as by the law of the Lord. Arjuna, however, is being engaged in killing for the principle of religion and not whimsically. So this makes all the difference. We are, by default, we are as nonviolent as possible. No one has the right to hurt another living entity or to kill them and shorten their life from personal reason, selfish reason. Now, we have to live on something. We have to, so therefore, sometimes we'll kill a cabbage or a potato or something like that. We have to. But we can also get fruit, we get milk, no killing is involved. So minimal killing and as low as possible on the food chain so that the consciousness is as rudimentary as possible. But even that is sinful unless we offer the food to Krishna and eat prasadam. So it's not that vegetarianism is inherent. It is less sinful than, you know, gross meat eating, but it's still sinful. And Krishna says that in the third chapter. Third chapter, he will say, Yagishtashinak Santo Muchante Savakilbishai Bundate Dwagam Papa Yepacham Jatmakaranat. That the devotees of the Lord, these santas, here we are with this word santa again, Santa Clara, San Diego, it's saint. The saints, they eat the remnants, Shishtashinak Santo, and therefore Muchante Savakilbishai, they are liberated from all sin, sinful reactions. But those who cook only for themselves, eat only sin. Ye pachant yatma karanat agam. They eat sin. So that includes the vegetarians who have no tinge of devotion to the Lord and don't offer it. So in order to live as simply and as nonviolently in this world, we have to be vegetarians, obviously. But we also have to offer our food and be devotees. And so constantly be burning any tinge of sin that may adhere. Because one of the points in this world, if you read the Vedic literature, is that we commit sin even unknowingly. And even though it's unknowing, we still have to suffer. Just like if you commit a crime unknowingly, you still have to be punished. They may arrest you. Oh, you didn't pay your taxes. Oh, I didn't know I was supposed to. You know, I didn't know how to pay the tax. Well, you still have to pay a penalty, right, or something. It's less, just like a premeditated murder is worse than manslaughter. Because you thought it out, you know. You knew it was wrong, you did it anyway. The other one, it was an act of emotion, violent emotion, okay, you killed somebody. Still a crime, but not as much of a crime. A knowing violation of the laws of the state or the laws of God, creates greater punishment, greater sin. Yes?
What is the connection between soul and consciousness?
Yes, the consciousness is the symptom of the soul. The soul, in one sense, is consciousness, or you can say is the source of consciousness in the body. We are sometimes compared, as here I mentioned, to particles of light in the sun. The sun gives off rays, right? So those rays are said to be photons, or waves or particles, right? You get into the physics of it. So the little particles are glowing. That's why we see the sun rays. So they have some of the quality of the sun, the big source of all the light and the heat. So we are little particles of energy, of a spiritual energy of Krishna, the Supreme Spirit, total spirit. So the soul has a place, it's an entity, and it emanates consciousness.
Just like the sun rays.
Yeah, but like a photon, say a photon. So we are ansha, called ansha or quanta of spiritual energy. And we're consciousness and conscious at the same time. It's a little hard to understand. But the soul sitting in the body emanates this consciousness that pervades the body. And The essential quality of the soul that is eternally conscious. But because we're in a body, our consciousness is covered to some degree, our self-awareness. And in the lower species, it's covered even more. Animals, you know, dogs, cats, insects, even more, you know. So, but we also aren't experiencing ourselves in our full glory of what is called superconsciousness in the third canto. So that's the nature of the soul. We're a little particle of spirit in the body, and we're emanating this consciousness. That's the energy. Okay, so now we can go to text 20. Let's chant this one together. I'll chant, you chant. So important. The jayate mriyate vakadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavitva. Excuse me. Nayam bhutva bhavita vanabhuya. Ajo nityak shashvato yam purano. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. For the soul there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. Qualitatively, the small atomic fragmental part of the Supreme Spirit is one with the Supreme. He undergoes no changes like the body. Sometimes the soul is called the steady or the kutastha. The body is subject to six kinds of transformations. It takes its birth from the womb of the mother's body, remains for some time, grows, produces some effects, gradually dwindles, and at last vanishes into oblivion. The soul, however, does not go through such changes. The soul is not born, but because he takes on a material body, the body takes its birth. The soul does not take birth there, and the soul does not die. Anything which has birth also has death. And because the soul has no birth, he therefore has no past, present, or future. He is eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. That is, there is no trace in his history, of his coming into being. Under the impression of the body, we seek the history of birth, etc., of the soul. The soul does not at any time become old, as the body does. The so-called old man, therefore, feels himself to be in the same spirit as in his childhood or youth. The changes of the body do not affect the soul. The soul does not deteriorate like a tree, nor anything material. The soul has no byproduct either. The byproducts of the body, namely children, are also different individual souls. And, owing to the body, they appear as children of a particular man. The body develops because of the soul's presence, but the soul has neither offshoots nor change. Therefore, the soul is free from the six changes of the body. So this Najayate Mriyate refutes this idea of all of these six changes. But just one comment here. Maybe we'll do this verse again tomorrow. It's so important. But this idea that the soul, the old man, feels himself to be in the same spirit as the young man. So, you know, why is it that you see also, you know, oftentimes old people, they tend to get, you know, the weight of the world on their shoulders, and they're not so happy. They don't feel so young. Well, that's not because of the body. It's because of the mind, because the mind is identifying with the body, and there's so many anxieties and worries and things, and you carry that with you. But we see from the life of Srila Prabhupada and also devotees, because you think about, you know, the Krishna, who's eternally fresh and young and youthful, you see, and your mind is filled with those thoughts, then you can be dancing, chanting, and, you know, working in this life. And it doesn't matter. You can be 20, you can be 40, you can be 60. And you can feel yourself in the same spirit. Like when I'm now almost 60. I joined when I was 25, so, you know, it's a good hunk of my life right there.
You're 60?
Almost. 58. I'll be 59 in December. So, and yet I can honestly say that I don't feel like I've aged internally in ISKCON. You know what I mean? The same sense of, you know, happiness, kirtan, all that. Because that's the nature of the soul, to be eternally youthful, because Krishna is eternally youthful.
You are more active.
Huh?
You are more active than us.
You look at least 20 years younger.
I know. That's a healthy living, and lack of stress. But it's not just me. You know, most devotees don't look their age. Shiv Kumar, how old are you?
Guess.
Huh?
You can guess.
45. 35?
Yeah.
Okay. You see, I couldn't, when you're 45, you won't look much older. You know. Yeah, the hair will look white, that's all. So the point is that it's a question of your internal spirit. It's not a question of the, you know, the aging of the body, and therefore, oh, now I have to feel 60, you know, I'm 60 years old. You know, it's all foolishness. Truly speaking, and we can see Prabhupada, he was so enthusiastic, just like a young man. His young disciples couldn't keep up with him. You know, he was so fired up, you know, because he was moved by that spiritual energy, which is ever youthful and ever fresh. So yes, the body is a burden that eventually will weigh us down. I can't jump around like I did when I was 25. But inside, you know, the desire to do it is still there. And the same spirit is there. And it's a proof, really, that the soul is avyaya, as we described recently. It doesn't deteriorate. When you're, you know, acting spiritually, you should have great enthusiasm. You know, enthusiasm to do the limits of what your body can let you do, you know, as much as possible, because there's a joy and an enlivenment that's coming, you know, from the heart, that has nothing to do with your senses and their ability, you know, to function, and it's a intuitive indication, confirmation of the reality of Krishna consciousness. Anyway, just wanted to mention that. Any final questions or comments on these points? Okay, so we can meditate on the appearance day of Lalita Sakhi tomorrow. It's coming tomorrow. I have a poem that I wrote last year for the appearance of Lalita. It's an Ashtaka by Rupa Goswami, so hopefully we'll get to read it tomorrow. You can remind me, and we'll read about Lalita. And then 2 days later, Radharani appears. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hari Bol.
So you're going to do 20 again tomorrow night?
Yeah.
All right.